Let's change the subject. Gee, it's always nice to see you, by the way.
Thank you, Josh. It's always nice to see you.
It's like, you know, I was on the intertube today, which you kids know about, and everywhere I went, every page, there was Robert Downey Jr. I was like, ugh, this guy again. And I used to like him. I used to, you know, this guy is an addict. He recovered.
Iron Man.
And it would be good if he was just Iron Man, but he's in every bad movie now. And any link you click on leads to a smarmy interview with him, sort of looking smug. He's making so much money. And I never feel that with you. Remember, like,
ever?
Oh, I hated G's last time he made the announcement. He's phoning it in these days. He's making too much money. I never feel that with you.
No.
Okay. All right. So that's our banter.
It's gonna be a long month.
Yeah. So, would you possibly plug in the, thank you very much. I'm turning into my parents. I bring them into fluorescent lit restaurants and they still would complain that they couldn't see anything. So, the Buddha posited at the core of all human unnecessary, avoidable suffering that we add on to experience, not the inevitable sufferings of old age, sickness, death, the rejections and disappointments in life, but all the stuff we add on, the so-called second arrows that we shoot into ourselves, there's a root, there's a cause, there's an underlying default mechanism of the mind that creates suffering. He called it avijja, and it could be translated as anything from a sort of basic ignorance of what creates happiness to a misapprehension, a misunderstanding of how to go about relating to life. I like to summarize it as follows, that at the root core of all our unnecessary discomfort in life and the difficulties that we experience unnecessarily is an underlying feeling that happiness lies elsewhere. That happiness is to be found out there, sought amongst things that are external to us. This is best understood from a variety of perspectives, and I'm going to try to give you a variety of perspectives for understanding, and then a different way of approaching happiness, or securing inner peace. So, the one perspective is that the brain, of course, was set up tens of thousands of years ago to survive a completely inhospitable environment where there was threats to our existence everywhere. We'd be lucky if you lived to be 21, and the entire point of the brain, like every other organ, was to increase our chances of survival and to mate and to continue the species. Now, given all of these dangers, it required a feat of evolution to reward us to ever sneaking out of the cave and looking for a mate or a fresh food supply or hopefully a place to take a shit outside of where you're sleeping. See what an anthropologist I am. So the brain is filled with a concoction of dopamine, which is an extremely powerful reward neurotransmitter that rewards us for seeking and finding and searching for stuff to make us feel happy and pleasurable. The rewards that we feel for being at home and safe are based on serotonin, but they're very, very small in compared to the blast of reward chemicals we get for venturing out and looking for external stuff. Another way to look at it is that from the time we're infants, all of our deepest needs and discomforts are addressed externally. When we cry from cold or hunger, or I guess we soiled ourselves, or whatever infants do, all of the answers come from the outside. And so throughout the course of life, we mistake meeting our desperate biological needs externally. We believe that that's the way we'll find all of our needs, or all of our emotional states will be answered externally. We believe when we're lonely that we've got to find something that answers it externally. When we're sad, we've got to divert ourselves or cure it externally. When we're upset, when we're lost, confused, when we feel rejected or abandoned, or when we feel hopeless, or when we feel that there's something missing, we turn again and again and again to the world to answer these emotional states. We believe, just like when we were infants crying and wailing, that eventually something or someone will come to our rescue. We believe when we're sad that if we stomp our feet and berate ourselves and either hide or cry loud enough to others, that it will be solved externally. Now, this view that happiness, security, and peace of mind is to be sought elsewhere is also fortified in our culture, in the very ways we're trained. The human experience is often dramatized in our culture, and it's shown that people have to go through, in our romantic comedies and our films and our books and all the narratives that we surround ourselves, that there's something wrong, there's something missing, and after a great deal of searching externally throughout the world and traveling about, that Dorothy finally clicks her heels and winds up. And even if she finds out that it was where she started, the idea is that it has to be the product of this external seeking, the striving. And in just the narratives, the autobiographies we tell about ourselves, we create the temporal idea that happiness is not available right now. It's somewhere off in the future. In my own experience right now, have what it takes to be happy. That place, that time will arrive sometime down the line, when I'm retired, when I don't have to work, when there's a 3-day weekend, when I hit the jackpot, when my shit comes in, when my ducks are in a row, when I don't know. But the idea is that there's a temporal divide between where we are right now and where some magical future that we orient ourselves towards, in the belief that it can't happen now. There's something missing now. There's something that we don't have. And that's the second part. There's also a feeling that It's not internal, it's external. This is what the entire consumer landscape reifies and confirms, that you've got to buy fab to make your clothes clean. You've got to acquire enough money to be safe and have a retirement account. You've got to get this and acquire that and have the beautiful home and the perfect partner and the you've got to have the right kind of clothes or whatever you need, that you somehow don't have it. So it's external. And this eventually becomes a corrosive feeling about our identity itself, ourself. We believe that there's something missing from me. Somehow I'm damaged, broken, incomplete, unfulfilled. I was born missing something. And we compare our insides, those feelings that we're vulnerable, that this feeling of disconnection must mean that there's something wrong. And we look at other people, and other people seem happy. That's because we can only see the shit that they're showing us on the outside. How's it going, Bob? Oh, it's great. It's wonderful. It's terrific. Oh, really? Yeah. I must be doing something wrong. This guy is all up in his shit and all happy about it. So we look at the world and the people around us, and they all seem confident and they seem together, and there's this idea, what the fuck? I'm such damaged goods. Because I try and I look everywhere. I tried these relationships, and for 3 months it was great. We had sex all the time. All of my problems went away. And then, blam, month number 4 came around, and they said something I didn't like, and that was it. It was finished. It was done with. Another failed attempt at lasting happiness. I bought an iPad. And it was encouraging for 2 weeks. And then one day it lost its shine, and I realized that it was just a gadget, and I was back sitting in my misery. Nobody actually thinks like this, but it's just fun to say this shit. You get the idea. We're
surprised.
We are very much in this place of looking, as the Buddha said, amongst the worldly winds. We look in relationships, sensual pleasures, popularity, financial gain. And all of these things the mind gets very bored with very quickly, because you know what? Even though we might somehow stumble into money or good reviews of our book that we write, or our painting people likes, or our Facebook post is popular, or whatever it is, still the next day we feel sad, we feel isolated, we feel cut off, we feel disconnected, and then, oh shit, it failed me. So, the good news. Well, before I get to the good news, I got to put off the good news a little longer. You have to feel you earned the good news by suffering enough. So when we have this mind state that believes that there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with this time, there's something wrong with what's inside of my internal experience, I've got to acquire something, then we go to the bookstore, and we see the self-help section, and there's the I Can Fix You books. You can be solved just by this book. We even go into our spiritual paths even with this regime of I need to acquire, get, become someone different to be capable of experiencing peace, tranquility, inner ease, satisfaction, inner happiness. I'm somehow missing something. And this weird guy with the tattoos, maybe he knows. It's weird if he does, but maybe he does. And of course, the wonderful news is that you don't have to do any of that or fall into that narrative that you are missing something, that you don't have something, that it's external to you. It's not about becoming a better person. It's actually, as they say, it's about opening to, accepting, and loving who you are right now as a human being. That's where the solution lies. It sounds like every other great important truth, it sounds really kind of hokey. Like when we experience a near-death experience and we realize how precious life is, and somebody says, well, what's it like? And you say, all I know is you got to stop and smell the roses. And people are like, oh, shit, I think I heard that one before. This is not very exciting. I thought you'd have something deeper. And so when I sit here and I say that the core is turning towards yourself with compassion, kindness, and love, it sounds like the hokiest, most overheard sentiments available. So how do we do this, though? Well, the first thing is that we can use the disenchantment of all those times we've tried to get happiness from something external and have been frustrated. The times when the ups and downs of our jobs leave us frustrated. The landscape of other people leave us unbalanced. The times that we've tried to get approval have been unmet. The times that our creativity is not appreciated. The times that our gestures are unseen. So we feel this disappointment, and rather than using it as an excuse to either blame the world or blame ourselves or jump out and search for something distracting so that we don't have to feel the disappointment, seeking the distractions of anything we do, from the stuffing our feelings with food to retail therapy to television therapy to sex, to all that stuff, which is fine in moderation, but when we cling to it to avoid feeling disappointment, then it doesn't serve us well at all. Because there's a point to disappointment, as it were. Disappointment is a way into our internal experience, and it's a way to open ourselves to the true feelings that we've been running away from all our lives, that we've been abandoning ourselves for. Very often in life, when we want to win friends, become socially popular, we present ourselves as on top of it all, successful, having it down, knowing what we're doing, and we push down the feelings of despair, frustration, feelings that we've made a mistake, all that messy stuff. And so instead of abandoning ourselves, we actually turn towards all these things that we're so prone to reject, and we embrace them. And we find, actually, that if we let go of all the stories of what's wrong with me, why this feeling again of inadequacy, and we just go into it, all that's there is a hollow feeling in the chest, a tightness in the stomach, a lump in the throat, a mind that's a little bit agitated, perhaps there's a shallow breath. But that's it. It's just expressions of the body. And we find that rather than needing all the time to ignore it, run away from it, deny it, reject it, that we can actually be with the very sensations and experiences that we've been not trying to feel. Suddenly it doesn't become that there's something wrong with us when we have a frustration, or when a relationship is falling apart, or when a job doesn't live up to our expectations, or when a roommate leaves a towel on the floor, or when a family member is not supportive. Suddenly that doesn't become a feeling of there's something wrong with life. It simply becomes an expression of, oh, this is what life does feel like. This is what happens with a human birth. There's nothing wrong here. When we let go of the idea of, oh my God, I'm in misery, I'm suffering, and we just experience what's there, again, it's just a lump in the throat and a solidity in the stomach or an emptiness in the chest, and we can live with that. Eventually, we can use these feelings to be the very energy that propels us deeper into the spiritual agenda, the spiritual path. We use this experience of having been able to be with our frustrations and our sadnesses and our discomforts. And we know now that we actually are capable of awareness that we never dreamed we were. When we drop this external quest, it's interesting how much peace the mind acquires just when we stop thinking that, oh, this job, this relationship, this opportunity is going to be the thing. This is going to be the shit. This is going to be the stuff that pulls me out. Because all that, those expectations, all of those ideas, those pre-plannings, those visualizations of how great, or all of that storytelling is a lot of mental agitation. And it keeps us from actually experiencing and living our lives as it really is. And when we let go of all that storytelling, what's beneath it is much older feelings, those deepest feelings of disconnection and loneliness that we've had ever since infancy, from the times when our caretakers, our loved ones, the kids at school rejected us. We can begin to open to those deeper feelings. And they, just like the present frustrations, all they are a bunch of somatically held expressions. Heaviness, lumpiness, solidity in the belly, a lack of a shallowness in the breath, a sense of a sluggish mind. It's just a bunch of stuff that we can open to. And that's when we really begin to find that if we open to this stuff with care and compassion, that we can develop ease no matter what we're experiencing. And that's when we really begin to acquire that true sense of security and tranquility and peace that we've been searching for all our lives. Not in the happy frou-frou, you know, approval from others and all that stuff, which is great, which is wonderful, it's fine, but that's not where lasting tranquility and ease comes from. But when we can face the stuff that we've been running from, avoiding, open to it, hold it, give it space, stay with it as it arises and passes, that's a kind of ease, a kind of stillness that gives us everything we've wanted all our lives. And that kind of awareness is always available to us. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to go anywhere for it. It's not external to you. It comes about simply by remembering where to start. To start with within, to feel and turn towards the very real sensations and perceptions and impressions and movements of the body. movements of the breath, movements of gut feelings, the mind itself, everything outside of those thoughts and stories we work with, especially that's the stuff that's internal, that's present. Eventually, as even these old feelings begin to wane at times, and we're left with a real quietude within, we can use the external as well as the internal sensations and impressions to keep us peaceful and grounded throughout all of life. Because if you look around you at any given time in your life, most of the time, ain't shit happening at all. Nothing is going on. Nothing. If you're worrying, it's because there's no bear out there about to eat you. If you're built up in a negative story about somebody, they're probably not present. If you're worrying about your future isn't there yet. All that's happening is nothing. Peace. Quiet. The hum of a computer. The feeling of, oh, should I eat something? It's been a while. The sense of the chair beneath you. The breeze going through the room. The sound of whatever is playing or moving in the background. And that's all there is. And so the present moment finally becomes a refuge for the mind, the safest place we can ever seek, we can have all the time. So that sounded deep and all that shit, so I'm going to stop right there. I like stopping when I sound like I'm profound. That gives a good impression. So I thank you for listening.